Welcome to Season 5 of the Long-Winded One podcast. Listen as we showcase original work from top Royal Road authors, read by professional voice actors. Hear interviews from your favorite lit RPG and game lit authors. Lastly, listen as the Long-Winded One tries his hand at his first ever lit RPG novel, The Four Treasures.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of The Long-Winded One. With me tonight, I have an author from Royal Road named Adam Attenberg, and he has written, among other things, a piece called Dragonheart Core, which we are going to hear from the narrator named Benjamin May. So Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
Well, tell us about yourself and specifically really drill into those things that made you the writer that you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say I'm currently based in the US right now. That's where I spend most of my earlier years. So unfortunately for all of my European readers, it does mean I release chapters at EST times. Very sorry in advance. But I would say that in particular, most of what influences me as a writer would be my just early childhood readings. I was very much raised on Tolkien. I was very much raised on Howl's Moving Castle's writer, Diane Jones. All of those very mystical worlds with a lot of magic going on. And then when I was old enough to understand that there was more dice than six-sided ones, I met D&D. And that's, well, it was a downhill journey for everyone except me, unfortunately. So that's definitely been a major leading and for what led me to write this particular style of writing, mainly in that like lit RPG, game lit style. But I would say another thing that's very much influenced me as a writer would be the fact of my current career. I am a landscape architect, still studying, which is, because it's a rather niche field, I'll explain it a little bit, but it's the people who design the outside world. So I'm choosing all of the trees, I'm choosing all of like the groundscape, hardscape. And this has just given me a lot more appreciation for nature in particular. I feel particularly with fantasy, sometimes it's a little easy to get lost in the whimsy and focus on the daring characters, but not give a scale to the world, I suppose. And tying back into my Tolkien roots, just diving into the intricacies of a world and its ecology has always been very fascinating to me. And well, when you find a world that exists like Gamelit, where it's all about diving into the intricacies of fantasy ecology and people actually want to read it, then I suppose it was written on the cards from there.
Absolutely. Well, if we can, I want to start kind of at a basic level. I started the first episode of the season actually just defining lit RPG and game lit. And I'd like to ask you about this term in your title. The title of the story is Dragonheart Core. Tell us about what that means.
Absolutely. The core is, so the overall genre is called Dungeon Core, but I tend to prefer to focus on the second word because the first one brings up some uncomfortable questions when you're telling people not online about this genre. But the overall idea of it is that an RPG dungeon has a mind behind it, a reason for existence beyond just being a series of hallways underground with filled with monsters, that there is a core, often a stone. I've seen it being a pearl or a gem as well, but it's most often some variant of stone that has a mind inside of it. And it is creating the monsters inside of the dungeon. It is creating the dungeon itself, often battling or even allying with the invaders and adventurers that come inside in often bloody ways, but it can be more lighthearted. We've seen it before. It's mostly just the having a rock as a main character and all of the fun stuff that can come from that.
Gotcha. Did you stumble across a writer who was in the genre to get into lit RPG?
In a rather ironic twist, considering the name of my story, my gateway writer is actually someone called No Dragons. Very apologies for the slander I wrote after reading his story, but a friend of mine recommended me a story on Royal Road as I'd started to get more into like lit RPG. And I read through that story, enjoyed it thoroughly. And when I checked that author's favorite page, I found a story called Thieves Dungeon by No Dragon. And I gave it a whirl. I've always loved to... I once again misread this, and I read dragons in his name, and I was like, I like dragons. I might as well check this story out. And discovered that it was very much not a story about dragons, but instead about a living rock taking revenge on the world. And it was all downhill from there for me.
Sounds pretty good, actually.
It's quite good. He has a very electric style of writing. I don't believe he ever finished that story, but what is there is plenty good enough.
And was this book on Royal Road, or was it on some other site?
Royal Road, yes.
Okay, so where did you go after that? Were there other writers that you, or did you immediately get into writing?
I would say I spent about a year mostly reading on the website. I've been writing online for a very long time, but not on this Royal Road website, or not for this more style of audience. So I kind of knew right from the get-go that I wanted to write something on there, but I didn't quite know what. And I spent a lot of time bouncing between various domiciles, because I would say my gateway into Lit RPG would have been No Dragon, but my gateway into more progression fantasy was definitely Cradle by Will White. So that was, I originally was trying to find a sort of niche within that style of progression fantasy, not quite like Xianxia, but just something a little more human main character-esque. And so I spent a year really diving into as much as I could read. I can't remember many of the titles off of my head, but a lot of them were, I believe Moonlight Dragons was a big one. You might be noticing a dragon theme. I'm worried I'm saying that too often now.
Well, I just want to be clear. Not everybody that listens to this podcast in particular is currently into Lit RPG. So tell us about progression fantasy. Would you define that for us?
I don't want to call it a new genre because it's existed as far back as, say, Journey to the West in ancient China, but it's much more of a genre that's come to light recently. And I would best describe it as taking a character and having them become stronger as the main meat of a story. It's not quite, it doesn't have to be like an RPG style of the numbers go up. It doesn't have to be in even so far as like combat specific abilities, like learning to punch harder, but it does have to be where the story mostly revolves around a character desiring to grow stronger and fighting for that desire. Very broad category, has a lot of different aspects to it. A very common one that you'll see a lot is in the martial arts style, which is where Cradle by Will Wright, which I believe is one of the most popular or at least well-known stories of the genre, that one comes in. That one's quite beloved, I believe. There's also, of course, Mother of Learning by Nobody103. That's quite popular. But just like a lot of these stories where it really tackles things in different ways, just trying to dive into a character getting stronger.
Gotcha. When did you pick up the pen or the keyboard? So I guess is the better term.
If I was handwriting this, we would all, I think weekly chapters would be very hard for me to obtain. Would you say for this story or for writing in general?
Writing in general, yeah. When did you start tapping the keys?
At the beloved age of 6, funnily enough. I have this story memorized because my parents like to mock me with it. But I believe I was outside and my father was reading me a story. And he told me that the author's name was the same as mine. And this was so blindsiding for young child Adam that he immediately ran inside and decided to write his own story. Not quite sure if I was attempting to duel the author of that story in some way to be the only successful writer, Adam, or I was merely very inspired by them. But what happens was that I started writing and I just never stopped.
You never stopped trying to fight the Adams of the world?
Yes. Unfortunately, it's a very common name. My list to go through is quite long.
Okay. So after the age of 6, maybe let's fast forward a bit. When did you start writing what you would consider polished material?
There's a Stephen King quote that I'm a big fan of, where it's the idea of in order to be truly skilled at something, you have to do it for 10,000 hours. And it's not quite the same for writing, because a lot of writing is bashing your head against a keyboard and hoping words come out. But the idea is that once you write 1,000,000 words, you understand writing to an extent that someone more than a casual school essays and such like that. And I think I hit a million when I was 17 or so, when I finished my first novel that I have shoved under the bed and will never see the light of day. But I would say after 17 to 18, I hit my stride for actually producing works that I felt comfortable enough to publish online.
All right. Well, this progression fantasy lit RPG genre, when did you start writing then?
I wrote several smaller progression fantasy stories. They mostly fizzled out after a few chapters. I hadn't quite found the spark for it yet. I wrote those 2.5 years ago, I would say. But I would say that Dragonheart Core is my first real expedition into this world. I've been reading it for a long time, but this was the first story I truly felt was established, or not established, I suppose that's the wrong word, developed enough to actually move forward with it.
Well, it seems like a lot of people agree with you just looking at the stats from this book. You have an overall score of almost 5 stars. It's 4.68 stars, which is very, very high. Wow. You have over 1,000 pages for this and over 1 million views. That's crazy.
Yes, I was very blindsided when we hit that number and then kept going up. I almost thought it would just stop there.
Have you come to kind of enjoy the community and the comments?
I extremely so. My story is not, it's not like a cruel story, I would say. But there's a lot of murder that happens in it. And I would not have expected the genuinely very kind audience I've managed to collect over these past year and a half. I have never had almost any problem with like anyone on this site. It's been very much a breath of fresh air from just sort of writing communities in the past have a bit of a mockery of being toxic in certain places, which is understandable. It's very much a dog-eat-dog world, especially in traditional publishing. So coming here where it's everyone is writing and reading just simply for the enjoyment of writing and reading, it's been very wonderful. And the readers in particular, I have many that come back and they fight over being the first to comment and they post wonderful speculation and talk about just what they enjoy about the story. It's all the motivation an author could ever ask for.
Do you solely interact with your fans here on Royal Road, or do you have like a Discord or like a Patreon page that you also use to interact?
Yes, both a Discord and a Patreon. I would say the Discord is decently active. It's hard to, I don't truly have the numbers to compare against with another author of about my size, but very fun on there. We have our own inner jokes and all of the fun stuff that Discord servers, I think, are legally obligated to have.
You created this page on Royal Road. Did the Patreon grew next, I'm guessing, right? And as a second part to that question, what is the Patreon for you? Is it just to kind of help fund your art form, or do you have a goal in mind with the Patreon?
I would say that the Patreon is mostly a way for me to push my writing. It's where I'm at right now in my life. I'm quite busy. I have a lot of, my career is not one that really believes in a typical 8 to 5, and long nights are practically boiled into the salary. So I don't often have a lot of time, but I very much love writing and I would like to continue doing writing. And just having a little bit of money from Patreon helps to smooth over my need to push myself in my career. Right now I've promised like weekly chapters and I'm sticking to that. But just recently I've been able to start doing, posting additional chapters every week. It's not every week that I've been able to do that, but I've been pretty successfully adding more and more chapters to my repertoire, trying to just boost the amount of story I can get out there in time. And I don't have a particular goal in mind for the Patreon. It's mostly just a way for people to support me if they want. But I do have several goals set in. I'm looking to commission a new piece of cover art. I'm also a couple of characters that my patrons have voted for. If I can get proper commissions of them, so I don't just have to keep spouting paragraphs every time I want to describe them.
Yeah, I mean, there are costs associated with the arts, right?
Let's
skip ahead here to the next question. Aspiring writers now, people that are listening to this podcast who are like literally living and dying by each of your words, taking notes. Every person that I've talked to has some really good advice for aspiring writers. What would yours be?
First off, hydrate, get sleep, don't overdo on the caffeine. Every writer fumbles down those first few steps for too long, and that's something you really need to try to knock out of the gate first. But something that I would want to say, and particularly this goes out to those looking to publish online, less so for trad publishing, is that you want to set a win condition. And I feel like in the online discourse about gardeners versus architects or planners versus jumpers and those who just, oh, you need to map out the entire story, know A to B to Z, all of that versus I like to just start writing and see where the story takes me. Both of those methods are completely valid. Both of them are wonderful and they can produce incredible results. But in order to do both of them, I think what a lot of writers make the mistake of is they don't set a win. They don't have an idea of where they want their story to end, even if they don't know how they're going to get there. In particular on Royal Road, I see this a lot with up and coming smaller stories, where they set this beautiful premise and they've got these gorgeous characters that are so rich and so in depth, and they're striving towards these goals that make so much sense. And then once they succeed at those goals, the story very much loses itself. It's easy, I think, to come up with those first couple of beats, that first act, even in, this is hard to compare to say a story that's 500,000 words, a million words. It's easy to come up with that first bit of it, but you still need to have an idea of where you would be happy settling on. And having that idea, even if that's as vague as a dragon wants to kill a pirate, you need to have something that you'd be like, okay, the dragon kills the pirate. I think that's where I'm going to end. And just having that idea in your mind gives you so much more teeth in writing. You're able to make all of the goals, all of the story beats, all of the arcs so much more tangible and almost vicious in a way. You're able to make them hurt a lot more. You're able to make them feel a lot more because you are shooting, you know that they are moving you towards something in the end. And this is, as someone who has fallen face first into this problem, as I watched a word count go much higher with absolutely no progress made towards the end, it's very scary sometimes to try to think of an end before you even think the story is good enough. But having just an idea of the end can be what you need to get going in the first place.
That's really great advice. Yeah. And I think I personally probably needed to hear it. There are plenty of people out there like me who, you know, they're planners in life. And so they think they need to sort of map out everything, but have found that if they map out everything, it's not nearly as interesting to write. But I like this idea of kind of just know where you're going, right? And then shoot for that.
It's a very fun, I like the phrasing of set a win condition rather than an ending. Because I feel it's easier for people to understand, and it also doesn't bring up the hardships of like, I don't want to plan out my whole story because then I won't have fun writing it, which is obviously like a problem that a lot of writers do have, because it is somewhat less fun when you have a perfect outline and then I guess I'm just following the outline. But having just that idea of once the characters in my story achieve this, that would be a satisfying ending. It really gives, funnily enough, it gives you a lot more freedom to do whatever you want in order to get there, but you still have at least a goalpost to shoot for.
I love that. So we're going to be hearing your piece, or at least an excerpt from your piece, Dragonheart Core. Could you set the stage for us and tell us what we're about to hear?
Absolutely. So as writers, we're often told to come up with an elevator pitch, which is a single sentence that describes our story. And when I was figuring this out, I realized that my preferred one is, a rock is so angry that it fights a pirate. But I've realized that doesn't really set the stage as well, but I do enjoy that one. But diving back to my previous explanation of Dungeon Core as a sort of series, my story deals with a dragon, because I haven't mentioned them enough this episode already. But my story deals with a dragon that wakes up to realize that a pirate has stolen its hoard. And he is notably quite upset about this and chases the pirate, only to die immediately. And it's the story of him being so angry about dying that he rips his own heart out and becomes a dungeon core. And it's him becoming a dungeon, growing stronger, that typical progression fantasy work, while striving to defeat the pirate that killed him. Which is a sentence I've never really thought I'd utter aloud.
That's a great pitch, actually. You know, I mean, you could start the next one by saying, okay, a dragon and a pirate walk into a bar. Thank you. And we had, was it Benjamin May who read this piece and did a fantastic job?
A truly phenomenal job. He blew it out of the water.
All right. Well, tell us, where can we find you? Tell us all your socials, your websites, what you got for us.
I would say on Royal Road, I'm easiest to find just under the name Attenberg.
With one T, right?
One T and then B-U-R-G-H, just because I wanted to be extra fancy and throw in a lot of silent letters. On Patreon, I'm under Adam Attenberg. And I do have a website, a Wix site, because I'm poor, but it's mostly a bestiary, which is a collection of the various creatures that appear within the novel.
Ooh.
Definitely an interesting part of Dungeon Core is the sheer amount of fantasy creatures I get to make up. I believe we're at roughly 115 unique creatures that appear in the story, and somewhere around 400 that are named. It's a lot to keep track of.
That's a great idea.
As a landscape architect, I had to do a truly astronomical amount of research on ecology and creature habits and animal habits, and I very much enjoy bringing a taste of as much realism as I can to these fantasy creatures. Now obviously I've got my elementals, I've got my kobolds, I've got those that you really wouldn't find anywhere on Earth, but it's a lot more fun for me to try to come up with creatures that I think have a train of logic that walk through them. To point out one example, I have one of the earliest in Dungeon Core, they're often called schemas or patterns, which are just things that he is able to recreate with mana. He gets a simple green algae. It's just a green algae, not much of anything, but through magic manipulation, he's able to transmogrify it to have glowing spores. And now, of course, that would never happen in our actual day society, because green algae has no need of glowing spores, but it's just enough of a realistic touch to a very fantastical creature that I'm able to tie it into an ecosystem rather than just an empty hallway with some monsters at the end.
That makes it more real, I think.
It's much more tangible. The audience can really dig their teeth into it better. And a commenter put it a way that I very much enjoy. I have a fun audience tie-in where I put a fun fact at the end of all of my chapters. Someone called them Snapple Facts, and I'm going to wear that crown with very much pride.
Can you give us an example?
I believe I recently talked about Leviton melvillii, which is the largest predatory sperm whale that existed some 50,000 years ago. It was 60 feet long and it preyed on other whales. They were recently discovered, a fully intact skull was recently discovered in Peru. And there is, I believe, an exhibit at the British National Museum of History, and where it's just a recast of the skull, but you can practically stand inside of its jaws, like another megalodon. And that was perhaps my favorite thing I've learned this year so far.
People can come to your pages to be entertained and educated now.
All the fun facts. Be a nerd, but in style.
Yes, please. Sign me up. Well, Adam, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your work with us. We really enjoyed having you.
Thank you very much for having me on. This has been a delight.
Thank you for joining us down this Lit RPG deep dive. Please consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts and visit us over at longwinded.one, where you can see past episodes and find all of our socials, even our new Discord server. We hope you enjoy.